You're listening to Distraction Therapy with me, Rob Watson, a space for reflection, symbolic exploration, and the slow emergence of ideas. Each episode invites you to pause, notice, and wander with curiosity through thought, voice, and imagination. To find out more, go to robwatsonmedia.net or follow on social media at robwmedia. Rob Watson here, and this is a distraction therapy podcast, which I'm rebooting or restarting again because I have a project that I want to develop. It is Monday, the 23rd of June, 2025, and I'm sitting at Leicester Cathedral, enjoying the open space in the garden at the front. It's a bit windy today, but it's sunny, cloudy, but kind of goes in and out, which is very pleasant and not quite as hot as it was at the weekend. I've not done a distraction therapy spoken word podcast for a while, and this is being hosted on my reinvigorated personal website, which is robwatsonmedia.net, and you should be able to find this on Apple, Apple and YouTube and Spotify, I think, if I've done my job properly. You can follow me on social media at RobWMedia on Blue Sky, X and Mastodon. Oh no, Mastodon kicked me off, and there's a tale behind that for another time. Anyway, the point of this irregular podcast now is to... I'm starting a project over the summer, and what I want to do is to... a period of study that I haven't kind of undertaken in a systematic way for a while. And I am looking to... Sorry, there's just some people kind of shouting in the back. As soon as I sit down and try to gather some thoughts together, there's like a chav shouting down the street. Anyway, that's Leicester for you. No, what I'm looking at is I was at an event late last year. And we were asked, it was like an arts event, and we were asked to put together, or state, before we started, it was like an icebreaking exercise, and we were asked to say what kind of animal we could be. I thought that was quite entertaining. And I kind of had this image came to my mind, which was that I'm an osprey and a tortoise at the same, and I couldn't make my mind up which. And, you know, kind of head above the clouds, flying into the heights above the mountaintops, which is what ospreys do. And then a tortoise kind of slowly munching its way through the undergrowth. And I wanted to kind of say that actually, that you know, I wanted to kind of, do I need to choose one, or do I need to find something in the middle? And this kind of led to a period of reflection, which I've blogged about, and what that image kind of means, and what it has resonance for in terms of my own personal development and, I suppose, psychological growth. And so I kind of, for a long time, I'd wanted to read and work through Jung's seminar notes on Nietzsche's Zarathustra, but they were incredibly expensive, and it was like coming up every time it came up on Amazon. They were like £300 a go for a copy. There's two volumes. And so anyway, at one point it kind of, they were both available, both volumes were available for about it's incredibly expensive for a book, about 80 quid, but I've taken the plunge and I've bought volume one and volume two, and I thought, okay, well, this is going to be a project that I'm going to work on to find out what Jung, because Jung was incredibly influenced by Nietzsche, and I recall he described himself as a Kantian by day and a Nietzschean by night, which is a great way of articulating the kind of the split between what Kant and Nietzsche represent, and what Nietzsche was articulating and arguing. And so I'm at the beginning of this journey, and I've read a bit of Nietzsche in the past, but never really made much sense of it. And the same kind of Kant is beginning to make more sense the more I work on it and the older I get, and trying to incorporate these things into my understanding And so from a psychological point of view, I kind of wanted to do a bit of self-reflection, really, to maybe try and consider, in the absence of a, you know, being able to afford a therapist, maybe working through something like this would be a viable way of reflecting and learning. And it has a goal, you know, to work through the whole series of lectures, and each about 400 pages each book. So there's quite a lot to be digested and considered. So what I thought I'd do is there's two things that I'm hopefully going to use to help develop this. One is to use ChatGPT to set up a project where I can keep a record and a note of prompts and questions. And so I've set up a project where I've said, you know, act as a therapist come professorial advisor, where I can be guided through a series of questions and prompts. And what I'm going to do is record these discussions, monologues, in soliloquies almost, and then I will transcribe them using AI software and then feed them back into the reflection process, and I'll blog about it and I'll share these podcasts as I go along, not really for anybody else's benefit other than my own, so that I can kind of get a sense of speaking is often a good way, a better way of taking your thoughts forward rather than staring at a page. So forgive me, I've got a kind of summer cough at the moment. And so I've been thinking about how to use technology, the media technology that I've got ready access to help and aid this process. So if anybody finds this interesting, or it's not really designed to be helpful to anybody else other than myself, it's a bit like an extended voice memo. And I know that there are lots of things that I don't understand, that I'm not knowledgeable about, and I'll have to do a lot of steady and regular processing of thinking and making notes and look cross-referencing things and finding out what this is all about. So there's two things I'm doing to start off. One is I've literally started last night to look at Jung's earlier published set of seminar notes of seminars on dreams, which is from a slightly earlier period in the 1920s, where Jung really lays out his psychological ideas and theories, and articulates them, and they were recorded over a number of years, and they kind of formed the backbone of his later writings based on these topics. And so again, you know, it's a lecture that he was given, or a seminar he was given, and vocal articulation helps to develop ideas and to promote a sense of mental what's the word? It's like a kind of a limbering up exercise. You know, you're stretching your muscles so that you can figure out, and you need some feedback from other people. Well, in the absence of that, you know, Leicester's not a hotbed for intellectual soirees where people can sit and discuss into the night thorny philosophical and social issues. If you like football, and if you like pop music, and if you like cars, and you're obsessed with your house price value, then you will get a lot out of living in Leicester. But if you're interested in ideas and the motivation and how people find meaning in life, then you probably won't. And they're the kind of things that I'm increasingly drawn to. And Jung has I was looking through some notes in one of my notebooks, and I'd written down that Jung says we can't assimilate the unconscious because it's unconscious by its very nature. We don't know what's there, and we will never know what's there. And actually, that's a really useful starting point to build around, because it's the unknown unknown. You know that famous Donald Rumsfeld statement of the known knowns the unknown, the known unknowns and the unknown unknowns. Well, this is the unconscious is the realm of the unknown unknowns. And we see hints of it, and Jung's argument is that through dreams we get the best kind of intimation that something is going on, both individually and collectively, and that it's about articulating a sense of the symbolic, a sense of the deeper-rooted meanings, not just impulses. Often they can be, we think about psychology can be reduced to drives. Is that difference with kind of Freudianism about the death drive or the sex drive? And Jung took the view that no, that just wasn't sufficient, and that actually these things are deeper rooted and more varied in the form that they manifest, and that there are different ways of these being motivated and articulated in our psychological life, and that translates into how we react and behave with each other, and they become behaviours, but they have deeper roots. So trying to create some space in which I can sit and think about these ideas and come up with some routes forward or ways to circle back. And so I've started reading Thus Spake Zarathustra. And to be absolutely honest, I got absolutely nowhere with it. It was one of those things where you're looking at the page and the words are going past and you're following the lines, but it didn't make any sense whatsoever. So I was kind of struggling with it, and I thought, am I going to have to read this about three or four times before I can find a way into it? And then last week I was sitting on my computer at home, and I'll be honest, I was trying to rip off some files from Audible that I can use in my radio program and get some poetry and spoken word things. And then I got drawn into when you click onto something and you suddenly discover there's a whole repository of spoken word books. And I've always ignored spoken word novels, you know, like kind of Inspector Morse or Agatha Christie novels, tapes and CDs and things. But actually there's a whole load of philosophical books. Nietzsche's collected works, Schopenhauer's collected works, there's dramatised versions of Faust and Goethe's works, there's the works of Kant, Hegel, and there's this huge repository of tomes, books, that have been articulated in through the spoken voice, and there's a variability to them. Some of them sound, you know, AI voicing will probably change the field, but you know, some of them are a bit kind of robotically read. But the version of Thus Spake Zarathustra that I'm reading at the moment is the Penguin Classics version, and I'll put notes and links to and the performance is really good. It really articulates it. There's modulation in the voice, and it's a classic English, well-trained English actor voice. So it really comes alive because the characters, it's not a kind of carnival-esque performance of different characters, but it does, you know, when it shifts between characters and when it shifts between moods and tones, it just brings that whole kind of flat, boring, incomprehensible aphorisms, which the book seems to be based on, into a, you know, it becomes a living performance. So it is poetry and prose, and the translation makes a difference with that as well, from the original German to English. So I feel that I'm about 2 hours, 3 hours into this, and there's 14 hours in total. So I think I've got about nine hours left, somewhere around that mark. So I feel as if it's a bit more enjoyable. And actually, I sat at home the other evening, and rather than putting the TV on to see if there's anything I could listen to, I just listened to the audiobook for half an hour. And I, you know, it's very seldom that I just relax and do that. I'm always looking for something to do, or you need something to entertain you. And this was, you know, I can envisage that I will be using this in a much more purposeful way, because I listen to a lot of podcasts and I listen to a lot of discussions and debates and arguments, and you know, YouTube podcasters, and there's always something where you're trying to ride a point. And I thought, well, actually, this will take me out of that framework as well, and it's a narrative. The other year, actually, I did listen to a spoken word version of Kant's Critique of Pure Reason, and it just helped so much to have, you know, rather than staring at the page, I think you have to have the book, and you have to be able to cross-reference it with the book. But also, you can get on with other things. So I can go for a walk, and I just love going for a walk and listening to music or listening to something and listening to a podcast. As you get your exercise in, I find sitting still, because there's not many environments that really foster that sense of calm and peaceful, quiet reflection. I've just been and just come from the Adult Education Centre in Leicester, where I was just answering some emails, and actually it was really calm and quiet. It was nice. It's the end of the day, the cafe had closed, and I'm not sure how many people are, you know, got evening classes, but the place is empty. And I wanted to record this podcast there, but I thought, well, if I'm sitting chatting to myself, that might disturb people. So I've come here to the Cathedral Gardens. And I mean, maybe that's a synchronicity as well. So it's for Nietzsche, for me, it's kind of like this. Everybody's kind of got a vague idea of, you know, the Übermensch, the critique of Platonic and Aristotelian logic and morals, and how Nietzsche points towards a kind of different kind of revision of that epistemological, is that the phrase, framework. And Thus Spake Zarathustra is really kind of, I'm trying to figure out who it's and in what way it's aimed at at whatever reader takes it on board, because it isn't descriptive. I mean, there is some really fantastic descriptions in there, but it's very much descriptions for a reason. It's very much descriptions which are they're the point of the text. So if you're talking about things like the actions of a snake, for example, fixing itself in the throat of a shepherd, it's an image that comes to mind. And Zarathustra implores the shepherd to bite off the head of the snake. A voice comes to him. I've just been listening to this bit, and it's like, you know, it is quite dramatic. But he talks about, you know, mountains and valleys and the actions of birds and snakes, and there's the tightrope walker, the death of the tightrope walker at the beginning of the book, and, you know, it's, and the sailors and the herdsmen and the contempt that he has for the clerics or the virtue signalers, and it's just it is really a fascinating set of images that he creates. But I'm not really, I don't have the capacity to situate that and to really understand what it connects with in his wider philosophical critique of Western philosophy, and what that means in terms of our understanding, because it seems like it's a deeply psychological examination, and at which the centre is man, or you know, humanity, humans, human people, which is which kind of rejects metaphysics, I think, is what I'm beginning to understand about it. But I might be wrong, and I might have to read a number of different kind of commentaries on this to figure out what it is exactly. And, you know, I've read these things in the past, and I'm not really quite sure. And I kind of feel as if I need to refresh myself. I seem to have forgotten most of it, and it's like I'm looking at it fresh. So what I want to do is move on to, you know, what Jung's thoughts were. And he didn't get all the way through this. It was kind of, he got halfway through, and then I think the Second World War interrupted. So it was an unfinished project, but hopefully enough to get a sense. And Jung's kind of, I don't think of Jung as undoubtedly he's a psychologist, is one of the many things that he was, but principally he was an archaeologist of the symbolic, and he understood the layers and the connections of meaning that are replete through our social activities, like say alchemy was one area of his study, astrology, folklore, our dreams, the symbolic images that are come from our dreams, and our, you know, Jung says that, you know, we're always dreaming. It's just that when we're awake, our active ego mind suppresses that, and we're not conscious of it in the same way as we are when we sleep, when we're not very well conscious of it at all. But there's always this dream process taking place, and we live in a dream world, and you find yourself drifting off and daydreaming, and you know the moments where you kind of snap back into reality, and you're not quite sure where you've been for the last, you know, however long period of time, and because you know our brain does have that capacity to, doesn't always switched on in terms of logic, and it fits for me. There is a discussion in some of the circles of social issue engagement that I'm talking to, you know, kind of delving into these days, which is related to, I suppose, the mind-body split issue, and that there is a tendency to kind of say there is no such thing as the soul, and another word for the soul is the psyche, and what that is and what that's constituted by, and Jung kind of was an empiricist and was a scientist, and he fully recognised and took on board the need to provide evidence, but he was also open to inquiry and investigation. And he was a great relativist, and I don't mean that in that kind of sense that the has been used to denigrate postmodernism. And in some cases, rightly denigrate postmodern. That's the kind of relativistic where anything goes. That's more of a kind of free-floating nihilism where there's no corresponding. For Jung, it's the, and this is embedded right the way throughout Nietzsche, is that as above, so below. The Gnostic principle of as within, so without. And so that shaped the whole of Jung's, there's many things that it shaped in Jung's thinking. An articulation of his psychology and how he helped people and how he described the psyche of being something which is the archetypal patterns within, which are deeply rooted, which then shape the world that we see without. And what we bring with us within has the capacity, and in both a good way and a bad way, to shape the world around us. So if we've got unreserved, you know, if we constantly are faced with failure, constantly are faced with public rejection, constantly faced with frustration that we aren't taken seriously or aren't given the opportunities that we feel we are due, that's highly likely to be because we are dealing with unresolved issues that are hidden in the unconscious, which we've not become conscious about. And which we can, you know, it's that, I think Jung, paraphrasing Jung, I can never remember exact quote, but Jung says, you know, that which is unresolved is destined to be, for us to carry around as our fate. So that, you know, if we have unresolved issues which we're not dealing with as part of the individuation process, then we will keep repeating patterns of behaviour which other people pick up on straight away, and it shapes our destiny because we've not dealt well, we're not aware of these unconscious factors and issues. So hopefully what I kind of want to do through the reading is a bit of self-reflection. I'm not sure how far I that will go, and then also a bit of, if you like, technical reading of this and thinking about how these are applied, and then looking at maybe some more contemporary takes on these things. Somebody like comes to mind is the Ian McGilchrist and the left brain, right brain type model, And then some of the things like John Vervaeke talks about in terms of the meaning crisis and where this might head in terms of a general sense of re-articulation of meaning. So the time is 5 p.m. You can hear the cathedral bells chiming. So what I'll do over the coming weeks is to just really kind of keep maybe two or three times a week, work through my notebook and to have a think about what kind of issues I would want to talk about and consider. I did do a set of kind of prompt questions for this, and I'm just double checking now on my notes on my phone that I did actually go through this. And the ChatGPT is great. You know, it's really good for just kind of getting the ball rolling. I had a good conversation earlier, and my colleague Sam said that, you know, AI is great for interpolation of ideas, but not good for extrapolation of ideas. And I think that was a really good way of putting it. And we struggle to extrapolate ideas. And the first stage of this process is beginning the descent. Introducing a Jungian metamodern inquiry into Zarathustra. And metamodernism is the post-postmodernism principle which I've written about, and I've tried to articulate in a kind of fairly tongue-in-cheek kind of way through the Radio Lear project. If you go to radiolear.uk, you can see, you can listen to some music and some podcasts there, but there's also some kind of fairly I wouldn't say interesting, they're kind of frivolous, as I say, tongue-in-cheek blogs about metamodernism there. And I think the, you know, the tone and position of this podcast is really to, well, in this episode, is to introduce the journey. And I'm not an expert, it's not a lecture, but it's a kind of personal reflection, an exploratory understanding, and using these techniques to identify and to allow something to emerge rather than having a clear sense of understanding it. And there's difficulties that anybody takes on, and I've found the text to read quite difficult. I kind of want to produce this in a way which is scholarly and therapeutic, and also to get something out of it which is creative and symbolic rather than just passing on information. That's the last thing that I want it to be. So I might come at this from an experimental angle and do some sound recordings or some images, photographs or something that might help to explore. Creative imagination is a technique that Jung developed, which I'd hope to be able to explore. And so the questions in terms of what's drawn me to this in my time of life, it's the sense that there's some kind of unresolved issues. And I did a podcast last week which is about the kind of parasitical nature of a lot of contemporary life, is that we're not, the feeling that we're, and this is the meaning crisis and the impulse towards a metamodernism, which is, you know, the Hansi Freinach phrase, which is after the deconstruction must come the reconstruction, that we're not sufficiently finding life meaningful, and that we need to explore different ways and anticipate different ways that we might develop this process. So it's a search for meaning in a culture of confusion and fragmentation. So I'll try and to figure out what it is that I am engaged with in this. You know, is what is the joy in this? I think is a very good question to ask. And you know, think about the Zarathustra figure as a prophet, a trickster, a symbol of broken transcendence, or something else entirely. I'm reading from the ChatGPT generated notes, and it you know, starting to understand this as a prophet rather than as a, it's a kind of an inverted prophet, if you like, rather than as somebody who shows you the whole expanse of society. What he's doing is showing us the challenging nature of our own sense of identity, our own sense of who we are. So I think I will probably express some ambiguity and discomfort about an ambivalence towards this, and use the metaphors that are, and analogies that are coming forward from Nietzsche to ask questions about my own ongoing practice. Anyway, I have probably witted on far too long. As I say, this is kind of like a voice memo. I would be surprised if anybody reacts or responds in any kind of a way. But you're always welcome to, and maybe even come in, you know, contact and get involved, be part of the discussion. If you've read Zarathustra before, that would be very handy to have an in-depth conversation, either over a coffee or online. I'd be more than happy to connect with others who are tackling or feel the need to tackle some of these more general issues that we're kind of contemplating at the moment. So, yeah. Anyway, contact me via robwatsonmedia.net. If you want to email me, it's rob@robwatsonmedia.net. And my socials are at robwmedia. But until next time, thank you very much. This has been Distraction Therapy, where ideas wander, symbols speak, and insight emerges in time. To follow the journey, visit robwatsonmedia.net or follow on socials at robwmedia. Until next time, stay with the questions.